I'm Hillary.
And I'm Sandra. Coming up on the podcast, we're going to talk queer-friendly toys.
Ooh, sex toys, dongs and dildos and butt plugs. Oh, my. Whether you're queer or straight or anything else, do we still have to be embarrassed by sex toys?
Well, that's what we're going to talk about. I think the world has changed a lot in the last 5 or 10 years. And, you know, especially during this pandemic, sex toy sales had gone skyrocketing. And that includes the LGBTQ plus community. So we're going to talk about it.
The Quick and the Dirty Podcast with Hillary Welch and Sandra Plagakis.
Sandra, we've officially come to that hot part of summer where you seriously do not want to be touched by anyone, no matter how sexy they are, honestly.
Hot and sticky is not sexy.
Isn't it the worst when your partner tries to cuddle up next to you in bed, say post-sexy time or maybe under normal circumstances, and you would be all in for it if the temperature were reasonable. But now it's so hot, you think, do I stink a little? When they finally try and move, it feels like you're peeling a Band-Aid off. You're almost like stuck together.
Listen. Yes, I listen, I don't get close enough to my husband to find out, but if memory serves, Tim basically has more hair on him than most dogs. So I've often said sleeping with Tim in the summertime is like sleeping with a wet shag rug. And it's like, I can't even, but that's one thing. But the skin on skin, when it's 38 with the Humidex, I'm out.
Yeah. And then the other option is to use the sheet as some weird sort of protective layer. Yeah. But then there's not enough of it and somebody's butt's going to hang out.
Yes. Can we also address what's happening in our pants right now?
What? Pardon?
Like, okay. So today I'm wearing like a little dress to my knees and I'm wearing my little, underneath I'm wearing my little panties. And I'm just like, I just feel warm. I feel like it's hot and I'm getting chub rub and everything is like sweaty. And I just feel disgusting. I feel disgusting with myself.
Right. But then the only other option is to wear those bike short things. And there is no way to make that look sexy when
yes.
he comes up behind you and he lifts your skirt only to find a pair of granny nude beige silky bike shorts. Hot. Yeah. Not hot.
I know. And who wants an extra layer when it's 40 with the humid? Like, you don't want that in your life. So this summer, I'm like, I'm going to buy a pretty dress. I'm going to buy a cute little dress. I'm going to be cute because I don't give two shits. And every once in a while, there'll be a gust of wind and my undercarriage gets cooled off. And doesn't everybody love that? But then, and then the rest of the time, I'm just like, everything feels moist and I don't like it. What about now? I bought this Jeep and it has leather seats. And apparently in the world of cars, you can get cooling seats.
Oh, yeah. Curse's brother, he just got a new ride and he has these. And basically, they blow cool air through your seat and help air everything out. And it takes care of all your swass, you know, dries it up.
I don't have that. I need that. Because every time I get out of my Jeep, it's like peeling off these goddamn thighs off the leather. And it's just it's a lesson in humiliation every time.
Right. And then you're walking around with the imprint of the upholstery plastered to your ass and the backs of your legs. Or it looks like you just got spanked, which quite frankly would be maybe less irritating.
Oh my God. I hate summer. The only people that are sexy are young girls who wear crop tops and their little tiny short shorts.
They have no idea. They have no idea what it's like, little jerks.
I see them and I'm like, you guys are living your best lives that you don't jiggle when you walk. You know what I mean? Everything is tight and perfect. And fuck yourselves. So technically, Pride Month has officially ended, but we wanted to squeeze in one more Pride episode if we could. It's a conversation we've actually wanted to have for a while about queer-friendly sex toys. Yes. And today we're really excited to welcome Sam Whittle, who is a sex educator and therapist and the owner of Venus Envy Ottawa. Hey, Sam.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you.
Sam, welcome to the Q and the D. Can't wait to get into this with you because it's a pretty titillating and exciting topic. T- To get us started, you have an LGBTQ2 positive friendly sex store. What makes a sex toy queer friendly? Like, what's different about it?
Yeah, so I think the interesting thing is that, you know, sex, like, anyone can use any sex toy, really. I mean, there's some differences in terms of body parts, like what might work the best, but really any sex toy can be a queer friendly sex toy depending on how you use it and who's using it. I think the biggest difference really is in terms of marketing. So lots of toys get marketed towards straight people and cis people, but can definitely be used by queer folks. Though sometimes it's uncomfortable as a queer person to sort of pick up a sex toy and see, you know, this sort of really specific, like, hetero marketing, often like really cheesy marketing, and feel like, you know, that toy's not meant for you, even though usually, like, there's, you know, again, anyone can use any sex toy. So I think there's not so much a category of sex toys that are queer specific. It's more about your imagination. And I think queer people are amazing at taking things that are sort of meant for, not meant for them, and queering them and turning them into things that are excellent for queer sex in this case.
Can I be perfectly honest with you guys?
Yeah.
All right. Full disclosure. I was in Montreal recently and I went to a sex store for research purposes.
Yeah.
So I did. Job. And I walked by a crazy wall of dildos that scared the hell out of me. Like, I've never. I don't scare easy, can I just say that? But this scared the hell out of me. And then I, you know, in knowing that we were going to do this podcast, I started really looking around. And I just thought, if I was a queer person, I walked into a sex store, they are so hetero. Like, so crazy hetero. And I didn't see really any mention of anything that would be geared towards an LGBTQ plus person at all. And I thought, that's a shame. You know, do you find that's a big problem in the industry?
I do, yeah. I think it's changing more now. And there are some great, like, we carry some stuff by some really excellent smaller companies that are either queer owned or really inclusive. So New York Toy Collective is a good example of a company that's making really toys that are really sort of like thoughtfully designed to be used by anyone, but especially with queer people in mind. But aside from those smaller companies, there's still not a ton out there that's marketed for queer or trans people. It is changing, but it's changing very slowly, I would say.
Right, but like even sometimes as a straight female, a straight cis female, walking into like a traditional sex store, I gotta be honest, I don't feel like a lot of that stuff is meant for me either. Like, it doesn't feel welcoming. So it's just so overt. There's like no romance or mystery.
Yeah, I also think that's true. I mean, so at Venus MV, I don't know if either of you have been in the store or...
I have. I actually have. You know, full disclosure, you know, I've often talked about my transgender son. And early in the days, we heard that you were a queer-friendly store. So we had gone in there for binders early on. So, yeah, we were familiar with the store. And I will say something. My son at the time was 13, maybe the first time we went to Venus Envy. I called in advance and I had said, listen, here's the situation. I'd like to bring my son to buy binders. I want him to be there to try them on. And, you know, is it cool? And you guys were like, of course it's cool. You get yourself in here. And we had to walk into the store and Hillary, there's like, you know, there's products that are adult. But it was just...
There's a wall of dildos still.
Okay, there's a wall of dildos.
So you kind of know what you're going to get when you're going in a sex store.
It is, but, you know, I found it more educational, too. So that there was, you know, you do have products for trans people. And I just thought, this is so great that there's a place for him to go if he has a comfort level here. But he did snicker hard when we walked by the dildos. I remember that.
Yeah.
There was snickering.
Oh, come on, Sandra. You were snickering, too.
Yeah, it's true. We really try to set up the store and do all the work we do in a way that counters that sort of like, you know, a lot of what else is out there. So we try and make the store comfortable for anyone who's going to come in, as, you know, as comfortable as a sex store can be if you're new, nervous. But yeah, we don't have any kind of, marketing, like big sort of like, a lot of the sex toy packages just have like pictures of, you know, you can imagine the like cheesy pictures of couples.
Yes.
And we try to like keep all of that, you know, in the drawers or not carry those products or like as little as possible have that sort of hanging around, because I think the message that it sends to people, even if it's implicit, is that, you know, these people are sexy. These people get to have sex. These people get to experience pleasure. And if you don't look like these people, then you don't. And so that, I mean, it definitely rules out queers, but also like people of, you know, lots of different body sizes and shapes. The people on those packages are often white. So it like, you know, rules them out of feeling sexy. And so we don't want to perpetuate that messaging sort of in the store.
Yeah. You know, it's funny too. Another thing you're right. They certainly target a certain person and on that packaging. And then when sometimes you go in, you see like, you know, the leather and the lace section where there's like the sexy bras and the sexy underwears.
Yeah.
There's no plus size there for a curvy girl. I've never seen that before. And I've often thought, what about me? Am I not sexy? Am I not worth dressing up? I'm a size 16, but I can't find a size 16 in any of those stores. So I found that too. I feel like excluded, like it's not for me, or my size isn't considered sexy, maybe.
Yeah, totally. That happens so often. I'll give a quick plug. We don't sell any underwear or lingerie, but the alternative is actually another store in Ottawa that I've heard has a great plus size section if anyone is looking for stuff. But yeah, absolutely. You're totally right. Interestingly, the sort of view that like big sex toy companies have about people who have sex is so narrow, which is funny because that's really not the case in terms of who's having sex.
One thing that I've noticed about a lot of sex toys these days, you know, from my deep dive into an investigation for this very serious podcast, how many options you have by the way of look? Like I've noticed there's a lot of options. Like it's not all big, realistic, veiny dildos. There are some products that are just like downright cute and like pretty pink little vibes and purple silicone rings. And there seems to be a shift happening in the design of toys.
I think sex toys now are even more than like 5 years ago are just something that's a bit more acceptable, maybe a bit more used, or maybe not more used, but more people will talk about using them. and so I think consumers actually have made a big difference in that, in wanting to feel like, oh, I want a dildo that feels comfortable for me. And so maybe what I want is, you know, pink and with, I don't know, stars or happy faces, or maybe what I want is something really realistic, but I think everyone should have the options of something that makes them feel good and feel sexy, because ultimately that's what you want when you're having sex, whether it's with yourself or somebody else.
Right. Or maybe you want a vibrating blue butt plug that looks like a bunch of grapes. We all have our things, right?
I guess we have grapes. Yeah, absolutely.
Are we talking about butt plugs now? Because I'm game if you guys are.
I'm definitely game.
Okay,
listen. That's what I talk about every day, yeah.
I know, no kidding. You know, when I think of, like, sex toys, and I know we're trying to focus now on queer-friendly sex toys, I honestly think there's only two things that I see when I go into a store. I see dildos and I see butt plugs. And the rest of it is just, like, weird-smelling creams and lube. But, you know, there's, like, a crazy amount of lube in this world. In fact, I saw a jug of lube when I was at the store, like a Costco size jug of lube. And I'm like, what is happening in your life that you need a jug of lube? And can I be part of it? Thank you.
Like, maybe they would just like to be really slippery.
So, I mean, so beyond those two things, what would appeal to somebody in the LGBTQ plus community? What else is there?
Yeah, again, like it's so broad, and queer and trans people are, I mean, like all kinds of different toys. I think, I'm sorry, I'm like having trouble giving examples because really like like people have sex with all kinds of different things.
Oh,
I think
course.
We can talk about things, for instance, like if two people are having sex and they both have vulvas, things like harnesses and dildos might be really interesting, or double dildos, or something like that. Or like all the kind of penis and butt toys, lots of queer folks with penises might enjoy those. But again, it's just like, so I think the stereotype is that gay men want all the butt toys and the lesbians want all the harnesses and dildos. And what's interesting about working in a sex store is you realize that that's not true.
Oh,
necessarily. And actually, like, there's lots of people who like those things. There's lots of queer people who don't like those things. Like, the world of sex is just so expansive and so full of things you could possibly use. I will say there are some things that are coming out now. Like, New York Toy Collective makes sort of a range of like packers and different dildos that are especially designed for queer people or like transmasculine people in a way that might feel more comfortable or more authentic for those folks. So something like that might be something that you might not find in every sex store, but that can be really great and affirming for some people.
So what I'm sort of getting from this is it's not the toys that make your store friendly. It's more the attitude of your store and the way you help people find what they're looking for, maybe what they don't know they're looking for.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, often like people will come in and say, well, you know, where are the women's toys and where are the men's toys? Or like, well, can I use this toy this way? Because there's like this kind of person on the packaging and that's not who I am. And our approach is like, yeah, there are no such things as women's toys and men's toys. They're just toys that you can use sort of however you want to, which might not be the approach of every store. So for us, that's really important. To help people expand their imaginations and their fantasies and their possibilities about what you can do with sex toys.
Sam, can I ask you a personal question?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. How does somebody become an owner of a sex toy store? Like, where did that happen? How did that happen for you?
I worked at the store out of university. So I didn't start the store. I bought it from the previous owner. But before I owned it, I worked at the store and loved it. Like, I think I've always been interested in sex. I don't know. I've just always found it really fascinating to talk to people about sex. And so I worked at the store and I loved it. And one thing I found was that people would sometimes come in and want to talk about things like healing from assault or pain or all kinds of different things that might benefit from more than sort of like, you know, a 20-minute conversation in the store. And so then I went to do my master's in social work to become a sex therapist, which I now am, but sort of along the way ended up buying the store from the previous owner who I knew and who I'm friends with, because I love that, you know, there's like this good mix of talking to people about fun things and pleasure, and then also getting to dig into and help people heal from some of those more difficult experiences around sex.
When you bought the store, when you started working at the store compared to where you are now, because, you know, I will say something. Years ago, I went into a sex store and I was very embarrassed and I wanted to buy something for myself. And I did the old, I'm going to a bachelorette party and I have to buy something crazy.
Oh, yeah.
I totally lied.
There's a lot of people buying things for their friends.
For their friends. And I did. Yeah. And I did that, and I walked out going, why can't I just own my sexuality? Like, why can't I just say, this is for me? I need some stuff from my bedside table. And that's the end of the story, knowing that of all places I'm never going to be judged, it's in a place like that, obviously.
Yeah.
But then I found when I was in Montreal recently, I just walked in, I gave zero fucks, and I had a good time. I was mulling around. I spent a good time in there. I learned. I asked questions, and I walked out going, what is going on? That 5 short years ago, I couldn't own this. And today I give zero shits. So do you find that people's attitudes have really relaxed and changed and people are just owning their sexuality more than when you started working there?
Yes, I would say overall, I think the internet has made a big difference because, you know, now you can find a buzz, like a million BuzzFeed lists of the, you know, 25 best butt plugs you should own in 2020 or whatever, which just makes it, you know, a bit less stigmatized maybe than it used to be. But at the same time, lots of people are still nervous. They're still really shy talking about sex, which makes sense because it's not something that gets talked about a lot. I would love to know, how do you think you sort of came all that way in 5 years?
Oh, I'm old now, so you'd be amazed.
you just stop giving fucks. Yeah. Yeah.
She gives zero fucks right now. Like zero.
Yeah, I you know, there's just a point in your life where it's like, what do I have all these hangups for? Because, you know, don't forget, yes, we've talked about this before. I grew up in the patriarchy, a Greek, European family where I was never, no one ever had a conversation with me. I was always told and spoken to, and you're doing this and you're doing that. And I wasn't allowed to have a voice. So growing up like that, I had body image issues and blah, blah. And, you know, I'm also, you know, a size 16. So I always felt that I wasn't allowed to own my sexuality the way maybe a younger or a smaller woman would. Mm-hmm. So there were all of those issues. But now, I'm super cool with my size. I think I'm the best I've ever looked, actually. And because I give zero fucks, that's part of it, you know, the attitude. So, yeah, I'd have no problem leaving, you know, a sex store with a 10-inch dick. No problem.
Yeah, right, Sandra, you show off.
That's amazing.
Make that a 7. Sorry.
Hey, Sandra, have you had a chance to go online to their Facebook page and see the list of classes that they offer when they're up and running and it's not COVID rules?
Yes.
These look so fun. How about how to have a threesome? Delicious dominance skills.
Hello.
Yeah.
And I just have to know, what would someone expect to see walking into a class called Going Down and Eating Out?
It's a live demo.
What?
No, it's not a live demo.
Can I be the patient?
No. It's two very, very fun, friendly facilitators, usually talking about anatomy, talking about some tips and tricks, talking about basically how to go down on someone and how to make it the most pleasurable experience for them.
Can I speak to that?
Yeah.
I would say that most of the men I've ever met have no idea how to go down on a lady.
I think, yes. I think maybe one of the only depressing things about working at a sex store, and I've heard this from people across many sex stores, is that the blowjob workshops always sell out and the eating out workshops are rarely well attended.
Good goddamn. Of course they aren't, because these guys have no idea that they're shitty at all.
For sure. But I think, like, as a straight female, if at some point my relationship broke up and I fell in love with like this beautiful, stunning woman, I would have no idea what I was doing, or at least I would feel like I have no idea. And I wouldn't want to mess it up because I'd be some sort of rookie. So why not take a course? I mean, I would totally take a course, even if it was just to figure out the communication part, which is pretty much most of it anyway, isn't it?
It is. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, but we could just say that in all our workshops, but people, that disappoints people a little, yeah. No, it's true, and I mean, of course, like, also in the oral sex workshops, we get lots of queer folks as well, because it's not like just because you happen to have that kind of body that you know what's going to work for somebody else's, or that you've been taught, like, how to even pleasure yourself, let alone somebody else.
Right. Hillary, you know what? I think because we're women, I think we would be probably awesome if we ever partnered up with another woman. I've always said I went to college a little bit and I did some stuff, but as we all have, but for the most part, I am, you know, a hot blooded heterosexual lady. And I would say this, if I ever did with another woman, I think I'd kill it. I honestly think I'd be amazing at it because I know precisely what I like. And given what I know about my own body and my own parts, I think I could deliver, I think, a slam dunk, honestly.
Right, Sandra, but what if they don't like what you like?
I can't imagine them not liking, because I think I would be full coverage. I think I'd do a good job. I would be total full coverage. And then, you know, you read people, right? You read what they like and how their body reacts and the sounds that come out of them. And I think I'd be great at it, honest to God. But I probably only give them 5 minutes because I am a lazy lover in many ways. So
I don't put that on your Tinder profile.
No, I won't. I'm a lazy lover and I like to starfish.
Yeah.
Hillary, what about you? Do you think you could pull it off?
I don't know. Like, I wouldn't want to go in overconfident and then not be able to deliver on the promise of mind-blowing sex. Like, I'd rather surprise and delight, you know?
Okay, can we talk about blowjobs?
Sure.
Okay. Well, I want to ask about, you said the blowjob workshop sells out. Please tell me that it's well attended by both men and women.
Definitely men come to the blowjob workshop. I would say mostly it's women who show up. Yeah. That's, I think... what it is, yeah.
Would you care to elaborate?
Listen, I'll say, I mean, obviously there's, you know, patriarchy happening here where women are, you know, this is a broad generalization, but where women tend to be more insecure about their skills around sex. And so we'll come to a workshop, but also I think that, that it is, harder sometimes for men to talk about sex in a really vulnerable way because we don't also see that represented very well in, you know, sort of our culture. And there's this idea that men are already know what to do, that if you don't know what to do, it's like you're not a very good man. And so I think that's there too, if I'm going to, I do think that that's true and that that's part of what gets in the way. Of people showing up, but I wish that they would, you know, people would work through those things and still show up.
So it's interesting that you bring that up, because I feel like women and men, at least in the hetero world, because that's my experience, they have different kinds of pressure. Like, I feel like women have more pressure to show up to the bedroom looking hot and sexy, yeah. Where guys have more of a pressure to perform and satisfy. And then our egos get all wrapped up into that.
Yeah, I think that's definitely something that happens. And so, like, I mean, because we're talking about queer sex, one of the amazing things about queer sex is that not necessarily that those things go away, but that you get to have sex outside of that, outside of that kind of, like, I guess, paradigm of what sex is supposed to look like, which is why I think, like, queers have such great, so queer and trans people have such great imaginations about sex and what they can do with toys and who they can have sex with and how many people.
That's hot.
Yeah.
That's pretty hot. You know, it's funny that just going back to that blowjob workshop for a second and how, you know, I want to know, and again, I'm framing this in a heterosexual way because that's been my experience, but,
yeah.
But how come so many guys think they're good in bed when they aren't? Because, and when I say that, I take responsibility, because how many of us as women or men, queer or not, whatever, have pretended to be satisfied after getting laid when it's been shitty sex,
yeah.
And you sit there and then that person thinks that they just did a great job and you're thinking you just want to die because it was so shitty, and they walk around doing that same shit over and over and over to the next to their next partner, or you faked it because you just wanted it to end early, because I faked it more times than I care to admit in my younger days anyway. And yeah.
Right. And then they think it's like some magic combination of moves that gets you off every single time. And that's what you're getting for the rest of the relationship.
Now I don't fake. I don't need to fake it. I barely, you know, I'm of a certain age. I'm lucky to have one. So I'm not going to pretend. And so, yeah.
Why do you think our egos get so tied into our performance in the sack? Like, why are we so afraid to open up and have a conversation? Because it's not just an opportunity to learn about, like, what you did wrong. It's an opportunity to learn what you can do better to make someone happier in the future.
Yeah, I think it's just easier. I think it's so hard for everyone to talk about sex. And so people just don't.
Yeah.
I mean, really, I think that's, or maybe don't until, like you're saying, they're, have some more confidence, are a bit older. And that leads to, you know, people go to other places like porn to learn about how to have sex. And I'm into porn. I love porn, but it's not educational. I think that's an important message that we need to get across, that you can't watch porn to learn how to have sex well. But people do, and don't think they should ask their partners, you know, what they want or what would feel good. And I think that's a big part of it, honestly.
Egos. Yeah. Back to the blowjobs for a second. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
You know, back to porn, though, for a second. Is there you're right. Using porn as a method to educate people is probably not a good idea, because I've never had anybody in my life who's porn fucked me. That has never happened, and it never will. And my body can't do what those lady bodies do, or vice versa. You know, it doesn't work that way. And, you know, sometimes you'd see lesbian sex and whatever. And I'm just like, I don't know that it goes that way every time, you know, because they always have the same, it always has the same sequence and the same ending. It's like, no, it's not like that. Where's the romance, man?
Yeah. Where's the awkwardness? Where's the person falling off the bed or bodies making weird noises?
Yeah. What if I'm gassy, huh? Let's address that. It's happening.
You know what? At the end of the day, sex is like fun and super satisfying, and that's all great, but it's also kind of gross. Like, it's a lot of mess.
Totally. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that we also if you've had some great moments during sex, in the afterglow of sex, you'll tend to focus on the good things and not like the messy part of it, because sex is messy too.
Yeah. And somehow we just kind of like gloss all over that.
Yeah, totally. And that's just part of, having sex with people is being weird and messy. I think that's part of what makes it so amazing, honestly.
Really? I don't like the mess. And me too. And I have like wipes that I use because I'm like obsessed with my own body constantly.
Well, there's waterproof blankets you can get.
What? Seriously? Oh, speaking of waterproof, can we talk about squirting?
Yeah, sure.
Hillary actually saw that you have like a workshop on squirting.
Yes.
What's that like?
The workshop or the squirting?
Both.
Curious about both and asking for a friend, just if
that's
you're wondering.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's one thing that, funnily enough, it seems to be more and more popular, like more people show up at the workshop lately. It's, you know, something that some people with vaginas can do, not something that everyone might try or might be able to do. But I think a lot of it is just about sort of like being so in the moment and letting go and really experiencing that pleasure. Because I think a lot more probably people with vaginas could squirt but hold it back because they're worried about, like you said, the mess, the laundry, the sort of the whatever, yeah.
May I be honest about my fear about all of that business? I'm trying to remember, but I think I did. I either squirted or peed. I'm not 100% sure what happened, but that's my fear is that I'm going to pee, and that's not a nice way to end a sex session with anybody.
That's most people's fear. That's why most people hold back. I will say it's pretty likely that it's not pee. Like if you've ever tried to pee when you're super turned on, or like, you know, immediately after sex. Oh, sorry about that. you'll know that that's a hard thing to do. So it's probably not pee. But even if it is, like, that's fine. I mean, urine's pretty sterile. I think, like, that's another thing. Bodies just do weird things. But if, you know, you have the most amazing, pleasurable sex and you happen to pee a little bit at the end, I think that's kind of worth it, personally.
It's like a dog leaving its mark.
Sure, yeah. But it's probably not pee. I will say there have been studies. It's like squirting is really similar to prostatic fluid, so like a fluid made by the prostate.
Okay.
It's if you ever sort of like, you know, examined it, it looks very like it's a clear liquid. It looks really different than pee.
Like put it in a petri dish afterwards and a microscope and investigate it further?
I mean, sure. If you wanted to do that for science. Yeah.
So I have to ask, what does your family think about all this? I mean, from working in a sex store to owning a sex store to being a sex therapist, like, does your mom know you teach lessons on how to squirt and how to eat pussy?
Yeah, they do. I'm not quite this explicit with them about the details. they're happy about it, but we don't talk about the details a lot, I would say that. But they're very supportive.
Did you grow up in a sex positive house?
I didn't grow up in a sex negative house, but it wasn't something we talked about a lot. And actually, I don't, my mom might kill me for saying this in public, but her friends tease her that about the fact that her daughter owns a sex store, because it's, you know, not a topic she's super comfortable talking about, I would say. But she tried really hard to not pass that on, and I guess she did a good job.
Yeah, I'd say you seem pretty comfortable talking about the many wonders of the human body.
Yeah, I am. So, yeah.
And what about friends and family, other family members? Do they come to you for advice?
Family members, not so much. Friends do, though, for sure. And that's, I mean, I'm happy to talk to friends. I like it less when random people in bars come up to me and ask me sex advice. But no, for friends or people I know, I'm happy to talk about it.
Well, I want to thank you for coming on the podcast today, Sam.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. It was a great conversation.
I know that our focus was queer-friendly toys, but of course we got to squirting and all the other stuff pretty quick.
That's okay. Queer.
That's right.
Yeah.
So if anybody wants more information on Venus Envy, why don't you just give out the website?
Sure. So it's just venusenvy.ca.
Okay, that's perfect. Sam, thank you again.
Sam, thank you so, so much.
This episode is over, but the conversation doesn't have to be. Follow Hillary and Sandra on social. Instagram at Hillary on Air, at SandraKiss1053. Twitter at Hillary Welch, at SandraKiss1053. And on Facebook at Quick and Dirty Podcast. Got a question? Email Hillary and Sandra, thequickandthedirty@gmail.com. Don't forget, you can download the podcast each week to your mobile device to listen offline. Find The Quick and the Dirty on frequencypodcastnetwork.com, iTunes, or wherever you download your podcasts.